Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Jacob L. from Bismarck, North Dakota. He's an NWT pro, and he just finished second place out on Green Bay as the third stop of the NWT here in the 2024 season. I don't have a ton of experience personally out on Green Bay, but what I gathered following this tournament was that it's one of the toughest bites. It's the toughest time of year to be fishing out on Green Bay. Green Bay being just an unbelievable big fish destination for walleye fishing year round. We talk about Green Bay all the time, but I had never really particularly heard the story of what it's like to fish Green Bay in June. Now, for those that know a lot about it, they'll probably be able to explain it better than me. And Jake does a great job in this interview, talking about what makes it so tough, because the walleyes are there. But also, there's so much food in the system. In June, the alewife come out of Lake Michigan, they go into Green Bay and they spawn. I mean, it's just billions and billions of pounds of biomass that come in and these alewives. So they're spawning and there's just so much of it in the system. And so it just makes the bite really, really tough. Like, what are you going to do with a presentation to make a walleye bite when its belly is completely full of alewife? And that's what makes this really tough, but that's also what makes for really great, interesting conversation. And usually when a lot of great anglers are challenged with a tough bite, they learn a lot, and that allows us to learn from them. So let's get to it. We've got NWT Pro Jacob L. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. For information on this area and the fishing opportunities here, head to sdglacialakes.com. You'll see the link is in the description of this podcast. On there, you're going to find all the resources that you need to research. Or if you feel like you're already familiar with the fishing opportunities there and you already plan your annual trip, if you're not checking out this website and the information on it, then you're leaving some on the table. Head to sdglacialakes.com. You're going to find the lodging opportunities. You're going to see maps of the area. You click on the fishing tab. It's going to showcase some of the great fishing opportunities in that area. From there, you can look up the local guide services or the bait shops. That's where you're going to find the real-time fishing reports that you need when you're looking ahead and planning on one of these trips. So again, if you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglacialakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. All right, man. Jacob L., thank you for having the time to come on, man. I'm excited about this one because we definitely have... It's going to be some interesting topics, I think, that come from this. What do I got to know about you? Where are you from? What are some of your earliest memories? Like how you got into fishing, like all that stuff, kind of like your personal story, man. What can you tell me there? Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I've been fishing for as long as I remember. I grew up, my folks have had a cabin, just northeast of Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, since my dad was 10. So I grew up going to a cabin out there on Ice Cracking Lake and pretty much grew up fishing. And my dad's just taking me out for as long as possible. And as soon as I pretty much got my driver's license, he allowed me to take his boat out whenever. And living on the Missouri River, it's not the easiest to get around, but every time I was either hit a stump or whatever, he got his boat fixed back up for me and continued to let me take it out. And eventually, I couldn't tell you when, but just started to get into do tournaments, and that's just what always interested me, and just the competitive, and then kind of grew it to this. And in 2012, I believe it was the last year of the FLW, I actually got into the co-angler side and traveled, did the whole circuit that year. And the job that I had at the end of that season, when that kind of folded and they were just starting the National Walleye Tour coming up in 2013, is I just made the decision, if I was going to do this, that would, it was the most, just seemed like the good time to do it. And if I was going to fail, I was going to do it on my own, and just wanted to see how I do it. And I've been doing every tournament since. So it's been fun.
Like, did you know anybody that got into tournaments? Like how did, who were your mentors back then? Like what, you know, what do you feel like, you know, got you into those first tournaments? I mean, was it just local stuff for a little while, leading up to it? I mean, you know, like tell me a little bit more details about that part of your career.
I would have to, I mean, it's got to be back to the PWT days when they had the championships in Bismarck here, and they would do the whole weigh-ins would come through the Bismarck Civic Center.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, those were the days that really got me hooked in. I mean, my early friends back then I eventually wanted to get to this point at some time, but I mean, those were great, doing the whole drive through weigh-ins. And that's, I think, really what got me interested in tournaments. And then the older I got, you find out about the local tournaments around here. And I mean, there's the river fishermen around here are just some of the best sticks around, from my opinion, fishing the Missouri River and Sakakawea. And just started getting to that, and I guess kind of really grew my passion on it to get to where I'm at here.
But I mean, you fished alone? I mean, did you have tournament partners? Like, was anybody doing this with you?
Not when I started. Nope. I was pretty green. It was, when I decided to do it, I did it by myself. There was a few guys around here that when I decided to get into it, Sheldon Meidinger, before I fished the Mississippi River, was the first tournament of the year in 2013. And then going on the next tournament was Lake Erie, and talking with him, he really helped me out just tackle-wise. Like, I was not set up for what it takes to do well out there, and he really helped me out on just giving me his tackle he used at the time. He wasn't fishing the circuit then. He is doing some of them now as much as he can, but I'd say he was one that really helped me kind of get going and pointed me in a few right directions, I guess. But no, I was the first 2 years in 2013 and 2014, I was kind of out there learning how not to do things, I guess. But I had a couple good finishes. First tournament on the Mississippi River, ended up 8th place, and Lake Erie, we ended up having a 1-day tournament and ended up in 19th there. And our first time to Bay of Green Bay, which was out of Escanaba, which was Little Bay. That was my first real experience out on that body water. And that one didn't treat me too well. But then our championship, when it was only 4 tournaments at the time, was on Devil's Lake, and then kind of turned it back around there. So I ended up having somewhat of a decent first season, and I think that gave me the confidence to that I could do it. And from there, I just dove in, and every time the new tournament schedule came out, I just did as much research as I could on figuring out bodies of water that we were going to. And that's what's really interested me throughout the years, is just, if I wouldn't be doing the circuit, I probably would have never traveled where I've traveled and fished the bodies of water that I have. And that's, I think, one of the coolest things I get to do over the years, I guess.
Yeah. Like, I definitely like hearing those kind of stories. Like, and this is for anybody. Everybody's from somewhere. And if you fish high-level tournaments, you got to fish some of them somewhere else. Or all of them somewhere away from where you live. So, like, that whole, like, destination fishery and, like, being out here in the Dakotas. So, would you consider, like, Sakakawea your home body of water then?
I would say the Missouri River. The river is, I mean, it's all connected, but I would... Missouri River system is why I will never leave Bismarck, in my opinion. This is one of the greatest fisheries. I mean, I've been fortunate to travel and fish a lot of them, but this springtime on the Missouri River is pretty hard to beat. But is Sakakawea, I mean, that's phenomenal. I love Devil's Lake, even though it's 3 hours away. It seems like it takes forever to get there, but that's another phenomenal fishery I love going to, just don't get to make it there as often. But, I mean, we have some great bodies of water in North Dakota here.
So, I mean, how would you describe, like, going to fish high-level tournaments somewhere else? Like, you talk about having success early, you know, that Mississippi River tournament, and then going out to Erie. I mean, that's really, really difficult to do. Like, those are, like, there's great sticks from everywhere. So you're going on somebody else's home turf. And you're competing at the highest level, like it takes years and years. And some people fish a pretty quality career and never really grasp, you know, or never really perform well on the, you know, on the away games, if you will. You know, describe that for you, man. Like, were you, I mean, seemingly were you just never intimidated by going somewhere else? And you were early on, even you were traveling by yourself, basically.
Yeah. Like I said, I was in 2013 and 2014 when I traveled by myself. It was just toward, I mean, I got into it because I love fishing. I love learning. I love learning new techniques. And I would say I was somewhat diverse when I first started this, but I've gotten a lot more diverse in fishing techniques and different bodies of water since then. But it's just interesting. Anywhere we go, there's just something different, something new that you pick up, and you just carry that. It's like, well, it worked at one body of water. More than likely, you're going to try it the next body of water, whether it works or not. Everything kind of relates, and over the years, you just kind of get your bag of tricks, and more so fishing to your strengths. Like my strengths is pitching jigs and that, so I try to do that everywhere I go. But it's having a being diverse in what you're doing has helped out from fishing all these different bodies of water.
I think that is probably, I mean, that's really like the biggest, most intimidating thing. I mean, that's, you know largely probably why a lot of, say, quality anglers, you know, across the Midwest, that, you know, they fish regional tournament circuits or they stay closer to home just from a comfort level standpoint, and maybe never even, they're just not even attracted to the idea of like going out to the Great Lakes, you know, like if you're from the Dakotas, it's like, gosh, why? I got no business going to, you know, fishing Green Bay or whatever, you know. But then there's some guys like you that's like, you just never even thought twice about it. You were motivated. You were inspired when you were young, seeing really cool stuff firsthand with, like, the tournament weigh-ins here. In fact, I think I was actually, you know, funny you mentioned Sheldon. I was talking to him, like, last year one time when I think some on YouTube, I think some of those old videos just propped up in recent, like, last couple of years. I think, like, FLW put it out on their YouTube channel, some of them old walleye weigh-ins, man. Dude, if you haven't already, you got to go back and watch them, dude. They were the sick, dude. I mean, it was just pulling the boat, the trucks coming through. It was just like, almost like it's in its own way, like the Bassmaster Classic, man. I wish I'd been around for that.
Yep, that's exactly what, it's unfortunate that we kind of lost that kind of aspect. It would be nice if Bismarck did that again, but just from what I remember as a kid, it was packed back then, and a lot of people that I still talk to that's talk about those tournaments, is that's what they remember. So it was pretty cool when we had it.
Yeah, man. But I don't know. I like the way you talk about, I mean, because really that's really the essence of this conversation. What kind of brings us together for this, you know, specific conversation is, I mean, that we're describing how you, you know, what you did earlier on in your career, but what you just did out on Green Bay, I think is a big deal, probably a bigger deal for the people that were there to really understand it. You know, hopefully we can kind of capture the essence of what was going on out there. But I mean, you're a North Dakota boy, and but you know, not to say you haven't been doing this long enough to know what's going on, but I mean, that was not your home turf out there on Green Bay, and it was a super tough bite. And I guess, like, I have very minimal, like, I've never been out there, you know, just recreationally on my own to fish Green Bay or any of that stuff. I've been out there for work and done like some filming projects out there. And I know a lot of guys that are from out there. I've had conversations before, but this is a new thing, like this whole tournament that you guys just had here in June. So, you know, to maybe kind of transition into that, you know, you've gotten this far in your career, you do these, you know, you're totally used to traveling and doing these destination tournaments now. But where does this one really stack up? And I kind of want to just start getting the story of like this particular tournament when you saw where it was at and the time of year that it was, and you started gathering information for this particular tournament, you know, what the expectations were, what were some of the things that you knew about, you know, about the way it is out there, and kind of, you know, what you were expecting even like before the tournament, just to kind of build it up and take it step by step.
It's been fortunate that Green Bay, and I don't know exactly since I started doing this in 2013, how many times we've actually been on the Bay of Green Bay, but it's been the most out of any body of water that we fish. So I've fished out there quite often. And when I first started going out there, you could probably go back and look at my stats out there that they probably weren't the prettiest, but just over the years and picking up things from year to year, that kind of made it easier this time around, even though the fishing wasn't good and it was pretty tough. There were still, I usually travel out and start fishing on Saturday. Since I got full-time job, limits me on more, but usually I get 4.5 days of practice and kind of just in my head develop kind of areas that I want to look at that are historically better areas from year to year. This is the I don't want to say it's the earliest because we've been there in May before, but in June, and when we got this schedule was kind of, as soon as that came out, it was knew about the alewives and what that could potentially be. We were going to run into that. So first day of practice on Saturday, I ended up going up north to the Cedar River area and onto the West Shore. And that's north of Ocana, where we were out of about, it's like 40 miles. And then up to the Bark River, which was our northern boundary on that, is like 59 miles. So that was a stretch of water that I kind of wanted to look at. First thing I noticed when I got out there is how many dead alewives were on the surface. Not only were there was dead ones, they're just freshly dead. I was grabbing some out of the water and they're still flopping in your hand. So there was alewives that were actively dying, and that was my first real experience with them. Ended up only catching one fish on the first day and fished a lot of good water, what I thought, and just kind of from there. On Sunday we ended up having to deal with a lot of wind, which was something, I mean, everybody's dealing with, but when you only have so many days of practice, you kind of got to just find somewhere to go out of. So that's, I went over the east side, north of Sturgeon Bay, and didn't notice as much bait fish, but also didn't fish a lot of water, just how windy it was, but didn't have much success there. In the same time, one of the guys I travel with, Corey, was down in this mud area and noticed that there's still a ton of alewives. There wasn't a lot of dead ones on the surface, but there's just a ton of bait fish, and he ended up getting a 29 inch walleye down there. So that, and there was a bunch of fish kind of towards the surface, but in my eyes, it was kind of a thing that I've had success in the mud before, but it can be, it's not where one would think that you can go and win a tournament, but at least have a good tournament. And when I went out there, I believe it was Monday, I ended up catching a couple fish, and they were quality fish. So I guess I spent the rest of my practice Tuesday and Wednesday just out there trying to dial that in and figure that out as much as I could, since wasn't really making these long runs. It's really only 11 to 13 miles from where we were taking off. So get a lot more fishing time in, and we only needed three fish. So in my eyes, that was probably the best area to try to develop a program and just kind of get something going for the tournament.
What's your style of pre-fishing? When you're breaking down a big body of water like that, do you have so many waypoints out on Green Bay now that you're just going and checking out that kind of thing? Or, you know, are you spending a lot of time fishing? Are you spending a lot of time graphing? I'm just kind of curious what your style of pre-fishing is like.
I do have a lot of waypoints out there now, and areas that, I mean, they're good areas to, rather than just fishing a lot of dead water. And I would say that they're just kind of good areas just to go start at and see how the bite's doing. And from there, just trying to cover in an area, cover as much water as possible, just to kind of see where the fish are at, and then kind of go from there, I guess.
The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. This is there's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there, with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. For information on this area and the fishing opportunities here, head to sdglaciallakes.com. You'll see the link is in the description of this podcast. On there, you're going to find all the resources that you need to research. Or if you feel like you're already familiar with the fishing opportunities there and you already plan your annual trip, if you're not checking out this website and the information on it, then you're leaving some on the table. Head to sdglaciallakes.com. You're going to find the lodging opportunities. You're going to see maps of the area. You click on the fishing tab, and it's going to showcase some of the great fishing opportunities in that area. From there, you can look up the local guide services or the bait shops. That's where you're going to find the real-time fishing reports that you need when you're looking ahead and planning on one of these trips. So again, if you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. A topic that I've covered a bunch of times with NWT anglers, you know, guys that kind of travel together. You fish these huge destination fisheries, and you break down so much water. It's so common, if not just about, you know, every but 90% of the tournament field. You know, guys are you know, have a team, or you know, you travel with guys. You share some information with a select, you know, kind of your squad of guys. You talk about Corey and you've traveled with Bill as well, right? Bill Shimoda.
Yep.
I think I saw that on your Facebook post. Two great sticks. Those are awesome guys that I've had on here before. I really, really enjoy those guys. So I'm kind of curious how you got linked up with those guys, but also what is kind of the, you know, your guys's, you know, strategy together? I mean, do you guys kind of, you know, do you guys compare your notes entirely? You kind of decide, you spread out and choose different areas to pre-fish. You come back and you share all your information, or do you guys kind of go at it, alone for a while and then share information later? Like, what's your guys's kind of style as far as breaking down water together pre-fishing?
I mean, I think it's the same as a lot of guys. I mean, it's teams in the National Walleye Tour is kind of a common thing these days. So, I mean, we're Corey and Bill and I, we started fishing in 2022 together. I fished with Corey in 2020, COVID year, and then he went and fished the head-to-head series in 21. And when that didn't make it, he came back and then ended up pairing up with those two in 2022. But when we go to bodies of water, I mean, we're constantly talking and what it might be like, what it could be like, stuff that may work. And when we get out there, we really don't want to fish on top of the water or on top of each other. And we're just not covering water. So we're just covering, or we're just staying in communication and trying to cover different areas of the body water, what we're doing or doing different things. And I guess just at the end of the night or each night, just comparing what worked, what's not working, what maybe we need to go try and kind of just try to develop something throughout the week together. So
in this particular tournament, you know, like the Alewives, you know, anybody that was paying attention, and for those that weren't, in June out on Green Bay, it's Alewife spawn, right? And it's just an unbelievable thing that happens in nature. It's just like, you know, yep, billions upon trillions of these Alewives, they come into the Bay of Green Bay, right? And like, that's the story that I keep hearing over and over. And yeah, and those fish are basically just gorged. They're already gorged, right? I mean, there's fish around, but they're full. Tell me a little bit about that. Is it just hard to catch fish, but it's easy to find fish? Does it also make it difficult to find fish? Like, tell me a little bit about the experience of just trying to break it down like that.
So just this past week, I mean, I'm not living out there and not being around that type of bait fish. From what I know and have learned is that this was probably the biggest population of alewives that have come into the system in quite some time. And it's always been June to where it's not the best time to be there. This is when they're coming in to spawn and do that. And it just, usually the way the water temps were, they should have been on their way out, but as much bait fish as we've seen out there probably takes quite a bit of time, since some of them do die off and then some of them or majority of them go back out to Lake Michigan. That was kind of the first time I really seeing that, but there's so much bait fish in the system that when I had my Lowrances and using my active target, it was, you put that down and it would be some areas throughout the entire water column of alewives. And when you are seeing that, it's pretty hard to catch a walleye when they're gorging themselves on those things and you're trying to use whatever bait you have to entice them to eat that over a dying alewife just floating throughout the water column or on the way to the surface. This is kind of what I see in, but that's where what I kind of gathered when I was fishing up north and just seeing all the alewives that were in the water column, but the way they were dying off to the surface. Don't know if that had much effect on my fish catch rate, but it was definitely harder and not what I've seen in the past on the amount of fish being able to catch. So when I ended up fishing, it was the mud, it's called, which is south of Oconto area. It's a huge area that people that are kind of familiar with the mud would know, but it's a pretty big area. That's just a common area where walleyes in the spring are kind of down in the lower bay and feeding on alewives. And as those move out, I guess the walleyes are kind of just following them out as well. And since we had a lower border, which was called the Brown County line, I don't know exactly on each shoreline what that represents, but that was probably, I think, 13 and a half to 14 miles south of Ocano. And so we couldn't fish past that. And if you could, I think there had been a lot of walleyes caught, but that big push of walleye population wasn't quite north of that yet. And the water that we ended up fishing, which was in the mud, what I actually was doing was just driving around and actually finding the most, I guess on my graphs, the most bait I could that would show up, and I would just start fishing. I wasn't trying to look for walleyes. I was just looking for bait. And when we would set up on that and I would put my active target down and I'd start scanning around, you could see fish just cruising through these pods of bait, just probably gorging themselves. And there's fish on the bottom, fish in the middle part of the water column, and fish at the surface. So it was pretty interesting to see and kind of figure out. But the fish that we ended up catching were actually, well, we were fishing in 25 to 30 feet of water, and we were actually catching fish from 5 to 10 feet down from the surface, and kind of just focused in on those fish rather than the fish in the middle part of the water column, because those seemed like fish that were just actively feeding and moving around, to where the fish that were kind of in the upper part of the water column were either just got done feeding or maybe looking for their next meal to dive back down and get an easy meal. So those are kind of the fish that we're keying in on.
You know, for this particular tournament, what ended up being like the most meaningful sort of piece of information? You know, I guess I'm just curious, was it the area to be fishing in? Was it how you caught them going into this tournament? Or in hindsight, like, what were the real keys to breaking this one down for the success you had?
Well, I think the main key that, well, we were talking about just putting the pieces of the puzzle together, but it was, and Corey and Bill and I have talked that Corey was out there on the Friday leading up to it in the mud. And I believe it was flat calm. I wasn't out there yet, but he ended up fishing in the mud and just was saying just how much bait fish were out there, but at the same time, how many fish marks he was seeing. Like, it was just by the sounds of it, it was just fish everywhere, but there was bait everywhere. And the biggest key, I think, was him getting that one fish, that 29-incher, that kind of was like, well, yeah, there's a lot of fish, and there's obviously walleyes out there, so there's a bunch of cats, there's a bunch of sheephead out there, there's catfish out there, there's muskie out there, I think there's a ton of sucker out there, but there's him catching that one fish kind of keyed us in on, well, there's walleyes out there also. So the day I went out there, I didn't plan on going really anywhere else. I was like, I'm going to, if there's walleyes, like, I'm going to go rifle through as many baits as I can and see what will trigger a bite or multiple bites. And that was kind of what got us going out there.
So then day one of the tournament, what were you preparing for? I mean, you know, talk me through kind of day one. You know, you kind of had the area dialed in. At least you knew where you were headed, right? We're talking about that. But did you have the presentation dialed in too?
Just how tough the bite is, I wouldn't say I had it dialed in, but I would say we had enough confidence that we were looking, that we were confident that we could catch a fish out there. And then if not, multiple fish. But from Tuesday to Wednesday leading up to it, I got two fish on Tuesday, and then our short day on Wednesday, I ended up catching three fish in a half a day. And was thinking that I kind of was maybe had it figured out. So I had some confidence going into it. And first, I mean, we weren't getting, but like I said, I only got three fish the day before. So I'm looking for 2, 3, 4 bites a day out there. And like I said, I was using my active target to see fish, and it's not like I'm just seeing that many fish. I wish I had a fish counter at how many fish I actually casted to. And it was probably, you'd get one bite for every 100 fish you'd cast to. It was crazy just how grueling the tournament days ended up being for just casting at fish and just getting that one fish to finally turn on your bait and commit to actually biting and then hopefully getting it to the boat. But we ended up getting on a program that it was using a jig and a crawler and also using a Kalen search bait. We were catching fish on the jig and crawler pretty good, but then that Kalen search bait was actually ended up being a little bit better in the tournament. But I think it was in 2022, the last time we're out there, where Drake and their team was kind of working fish with, I guess, glide baits and getting them to chase and go to the bottom to where what I had noticed is like these fish weren't willing to chase a bait very far. So getting their attention and like casting past them, I was casting usually the fish were at 65 feet. I would cast, try to get 70 feet and bring it over the top of them and just try to get their attention and get them to turn on the bait and kind of just do what I can to entice them as I'm reeling it back to the boat. And like I said, out of 100 fish, you'd finally get one fish that would commit to eating your lure.
Was this like the toughest tournament you'd ever been in for that?
I've been in some pretty tough ones, so I'm pretty used to that for myself.
Yeah, dude, like everybody has tough tournaments, right? But like if you were to look at the big picture of this, like this just to me just looked like one of the most grueling
tournaments. I mean, when anybody has to trip, like there's some guys that are traveling 90 miles to Big Bay to catch walleyes, it's tough. And like there's enough walleyes in that system, and those guys were going way up there because apparently alewives, if it's too early for them to move into Big Bay up there, or they just don't go up in there, the guys that went up there were finding it fairly easier I should say to catch walleye. So it was definitely not a lack of fish on the system, it was just the amount of bait and how tough it was to get a walleye tube bite.
You know, one thing that I'm seeing, especially since forward sonar has been a big deal on the scene, I'm seeing more and more of like you said, that jig and a crawler, you know, and those search baits, you know like with a crawler. Like what is it about a jig and a crawler for you that gives you confidence when, you know, the forage is an alewife? I mean, it's a pelagic bait fish. It's like a, you know, just like a, yeah, it's like an ocean of bait fish that are swimming fast in these giant schools, and you're throwing a jig and a crawler. You're not exactly matching the hatch. You're fishing suspended fish. So, you know, you're mimicking whatever, you know, an invertebrate of some kind, whatever it is that a walleye living out in the mud, basin of Lower Green Bay, you know, like they've never even seen a night crawler before. So like, what is it in that circumstance that, where a jig and a crawler gives you confidence?
Well, it's, I'm building my confidence with it. I wish
I'd say so.
It's just amazing how well it works. It pretty much almost everywhere you go, a jig and a crawler, you can catch a walleye with it. And it from when I am playing with it more and more now, there's certain areas and whether using, like I've been, there's times where I'm using a full crawler to three quarters of a crawler to half a crawler to just a pinched crawler on it. And it, whether it's the profile, the length of it, I mean, it's not wide, it's a night crawler. So just the length representing kind of the bait that's in there, but also just what that looks like on the back with when you're working it in the water and that thing is just kind of swaying in the water, it looks pretty enticing. So it's quickly becoming one of those go-to, I think, for everybody to use on almost every body of water that we go to now.
Man, I find it interesting. You know, it's like what's old is new. And the more we learn with forward sonar and all these things, it's, you know, I kind of like it. Jigging a crawler. It's like you can't make it up, man. You go out on Green Bay and cash a big check with a jig and a crawler. It's amazing.
Right. It's, I mean, the forward-facing sonar is something. I mean, I started using it 2 years ago when Lowrance really came out with the Active Target One. And I mean, just looking back, if I wish I would have went more all in on it right away, because my finishes going all in on it has been a lot better than without. But it's just using it out on Green Bay and just watching how fish, not even throwing out a lure, but just watching fish, what they're doing, and it shows you so much. Being able to see the fish that were feeding throughout the bait and the fish that were on the bottom, which before we came up, before we had any forward facing sonar, a lot of the guys were all fishing kind of lower in the water column. And now that we have this and we're seeing the fish so much higher and keying in on those fish more, I think it's been crazy to me just to watch and just learn every day I go out on the water what walleyes are actually doing out there. It's been pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, we're never going to know the answer to this, but it's like, you know, without forward sonar at all, this tournament, precisely like this year, you know, if forward sonar had never been a thing, if we were fishing with what we knew 10 years ago, you know, like cutting edge walleye fishing tactics in the tournament field, say 10 years ago, you know, how would a tournament like this exact tournament shook out, do you think?
I think I would have caught one fish. I think it would have been a lot worse than what it was.
Yeah.
So it
would have been tough.
It would have been really tough. More tough than what it was.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do? It's like, you don't even know they're there, but you know, keying in on that depth range, like you said, finding the fish that were, you know, at least for you, you know, and your guys, like, you know, you guys like realizing that you had, you know, the fish that were 10 feet down, or, you know, you had a way better batting average on those fish versus looking for the fish that were 5 feet off the bottom.
Yep.
And that is such an efficiency when you're looking at a lot of fish.
And when we're not getting a lot of bites in a day and casting at as many fish as I had in practice, that's one of the things that I picked up on was I was fishing fish throughout the water column, and the bites that I was getting was those higher fish. So in the tournament, I would actually, as much as you would see a fish in the middle lower part of the water column, I wouldn't waste my time even casting at those, because on the first day we had, I don't know what the wind was, we had a good northeast wind that was blowing across the bay, so I'm pretty much drifting facing with the wind and would just scan until I found one of those higher fish and try to catch them as far out as I could, just because they would be working towards the boat. So making a good accurate cast 70 feet isn't exactly the easiest when it's windy out, but yeah, that was kind of the biggest keys, because it was getting a fish to react and work it to bite before it would get to the boat. And once you finally found a fish that would commit, a lot of the times I would run out of room, and it would get to the boat, and the boat would end up spooking it. So, and just move on to the next one. So having good electronics and using that forward facing was pretty essential for what I was doing, at least. And
yeah. Yeah, dude. And an absolute grind. Well, final thoughts here. Last like 2 minute closer. I like talking about gear. I like talking about setups. Is there anything about your setups out on Green Bay that you're particular about, your casting setups that you used in the tournament? You know, like for you, when you're utilizing forward sonar and you're casting at suspended fish and it's a jig and a crawler or a search bait, you know, or a death jig or that type of deal, what's your setup look like, and what are some of the elements that you feel like you're particular about? Line, rod, reel, any of that?
I guess I'm not too particular, because on all my rods I run 10-pound fire line flame gear, just to be able to see the line as far out as I can. And then I usually use a 10 to 15-pound fluorocarbon leader out there, just clearer water. Just over the years, I just like as long a leader as possible. So usually I'm using a 6 to 7 foot fluorocarbon leader. And if it helps from a shorter one, it's just more of a confidence thing and having that longer leader. But, the rods that I was using was a 7 foot Duckett medium light walleye series rods. And this is my first time they've been out for a couple of years now, but this was the first year that I've really utilized those medium light rods. And after this tournament, we didn't catch a lot of fish, but I've really fallen in love with those rods. So, and then just my Lowrances. I've been with Lowrance for quite a few years now, and the Active Target 2, the AT2s, just I feel like seeing those fish out as far as I could. Most, like I said, I had my range set out to 90 feet and being able to see those fish out as far as I could to just get lined up on them and just wait until they came to about 65 feet to try to make a accurate cast. I think that was huge having my Lowrances. So other than that, That's about as particular as I come with that.
Well, how do we close this out, man? What's your final thoughts, man? What does this tournament mean to you? You've been doing this a long time. You gotta be able to reflect on this and have some kind of a thought of what it was like, what this all means for you.
Yeah, I mean, it feels great. Ended up getting second. It sucks coming up a little bit short, but for the practice that I had, like I said, the fish that we're catching out there, I thought maybe it could be something that you could win at, but at least have a good tournament, and fortunate enough to have caught the fish that I did. I could not be any more excited about the finish that I had than I am. So, I'm pretty happy with where I was at. I started off the season with a bad tournament out on Lake Erie, and then had somewhat of a decent tournament at on the Mississippi River, just for just needing points for the AOI race and making that top 40 championship. I kind of stubbed a toe at Lake Erie, so having my last finish and then second at this one really bumped me up in the standings. I think I'm sitting in 24th now, so sitting all right. I don't say pretty good, but put me in a decent position there for our somewhat home body of water on the fourth term of the year on Skakuia. So I think with that, I mean, it's going to put a little ease of mind after that to maybe go a little bit bigger on Skakuia, but
I mean, we're going to have the same competition, and if not more, a lot more good sticks here in North Dakota. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, dude. I'd say we can wrap this up. We definitely covered all my notes, man. So I would say, if nothing else pops in your head, I always end these shows with an opportunity to shout out anything you want. Anything, you know, promote yourself. If anybody ever has questions or just wants to follow along with your tournament stuff, your social medias, or just anything that you want to promote, man, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't post as much as I should on social media. But if anybody wants to come follow along or just reach out and that has any questions, just reach out to my Facebook page. It's just Jacob L. I also have a fishing page that's also just Jacob L. I try to share stuff on both, but I mean, even after this last tournament, I've had a few people from out there, just people that are interested that have reached out, and I'm always willing to answer any questions that I can. So feel free. So
there it is, man. Well, I appreciate it, Jake.